Happy Monday, everybody. I'm Jake Mintz.
And I'm Jordan Schusterman. And on this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we are recapping the weekend. These standings mean everything now, no longer ignoring the wins and losses. We're going to recap one thing from every series from over the weekend.
How soon in the season can you have a must win? We're going to find out on Baseball Barbacast.
The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that tried to tell you Juan Soto was good. Tried to tell you. I'm Jake Mintz, that's Jordan Schusterman, and it's about time the rest of the world learns the truth.
Oh, finally we can speak our truth. I think, you know, for so long, everyone has been saying Juan Soto can't hit. Juan Soto is not a good baseball player. And finally, now that he's on the Yankees, the premier baseball franchise we have on earth, now we can all see what he is capable of. We are, of course, going to talk about the Yankees being 4-0 on this Monday edition of Baseball Barbacast. The Yankees mopping the Astros. The Pirates mopping the Marlins down in Miami. If you don't know what a mop is, we'll get to that. But we are recapping all the weekend action. Good morning, Jake. It is nice to see you.
It is good to be seen, Mr. Schusterman. You said on the intro that the standings mean everything at this point of the year. And you could not be further from the truth, obviously. The 4-0 Pittsburgh Pirates and the 0-4 Miami Marlins will not end the year undefeated and solely defeated. But it is fun here on this April Fool's to pretend like that is indeed the case. And we are going to begin today with the mopportunities. Mm-hmm. What is a mop? Mm-hmm. I'm going to kick the rock to you, Jordan. This is one of your babies. Explain to those who don't know what a mop is.
Yeah,
not like the cleaning device, like within the baseball context.
But it is sort of relevant. So this is an idea we let's see if you remember where exactly we came up with this, because I remember quite vividly where we exactly accidentally came up with this, which was a few summers ago when you were biking to Chicago because you said there was no way the White Sox were going to hire Tony La Russa, and then they did. We were stomped in, I believe, Lansing, Michigan, is my recollection of this. And we were in a hotel room just, I mean, listen, you were the one doing all the biking, but we were kind of collectively getting delirious as we were on our many road trips in the past. And I just remember sitting in the hotel room just talking about, you know, sweeps, right? Okay, so it was probably a Sunday or whatever. We were watching some game and people bring brooms. They bring brooms to you know, complete the sweep, right? I guess ballparks allow you to bring a broom, or at least most of them do. And I was like, you know what? Sweeping a four-game series is more notable than sweeping a three-game series. And four-game series now, especially with the balanced schedule, are even more rare than ever. In fact, this year, I believe they're the fewest numbers we've had in a long time. And so I said, well, why not? Why not elevate the sweep? Don't just bring a broom. We got to go heavy hitter. We got to bring a mop. And you know, if you're cleaning your house, it means a lot more. It takes a lot more to actually, like, okay, we're going to mop this weekend. Like, that is a big decision. That is a much more significant, like, all right, break out the broom and we'll just do a little bit of clean. No. A mop is thorough. coming up with that term for a four-game sweep. And some people say, oh, what do you mean? It's best of seven. If you win four of seven, that's a sweep. No, no, no. This is a regular season term. This is winning four straight games in one city. That is also different than a postseason series. It just means something to either go into a city, as we saw this past weekend with the Pittsburgh and New York, or even at home where you welcome someone in, you beat them four times, and you say, have a nice day, have a nice life. That's what a mop is. And we had eight mop-portunities this weekend. Four-game series is the most we'll have in any weekend all season. And two teams made the most of it, Pittsburgh and New York, going 4-0.
Those were the mop-portunists over the weekend. And I will say, look, we champion ourselves about being the people who talk about, you know, the smaller teams on this pod. But Jordan, we will talk about the New York Yankees first. We will do that. We will do Yankees Astros in the beginning of the baseball podcast. And you have to start with Juan Soto. What I love about Juan Soto's electric and fuego start to the season is that he has traditionally been a slow starter in his career. And so to appreciate the wonder of Juan Soto, it takes some time typically. It is like, yes, he can be incredible and hit a ball 430 feet to the backside, but Juan Soto is the long game, right? That the quality of him in the batter's box will win out over 162 games. But for him to be so supremely good, so immediately, and so decisively in these games is just perfect, because yeah, it is exactly why the Yankees believed that this was the type of guy you just have to go get.
Yeah, whether it's for a year or for 10, it doesn't matter, because right now the Yankees are solely focused on flushing the disaster that was 2023. And for how immediately Juan Soto is able to make that happen is perfect, right? I mean, it is exactly what you could have wanted. And it's just great because, again, it's not like we're going to overreact to stats so much, but it is a great reminder. If you weren't really watching these games, you know, normally when Aaron Judge has two hits over the course of a four-game series, the Yankees offense is dead, right? It's toast. It basically has no choice. That's what we saw, you know, a lot of last year. Now, shouts out to Oswaldo Cabrera and Volpe for, you know, showing up here as well. But Soto is such a powerful offensive presence that time, not just that timely hit and that timely walk or that timely homer, it's just every at bat against Juan Soto, every plate appearance is just a life suck out of the other team, almost regardless of the result. And so that is where, when you add that in to a lineup that should still, once it gets going, should be pretty balanced and scary. And then, of course, we end up with all these, you know, a couple defensive highlights too. I mean, that's just hilarious. That's just objectively, like, that's how you know things are going well for the Yankees. But no, I totally agree. He's exactly what you could have wanted.
He looks a little better out there, for sure. Yankees fans, that is, maybe things are going to change. Maybe things are different now. But, like, that,
don't get too comfy.
Don't get too comfy with that. Everything else, though, get very, very, very comfy. So, just the stats quickly. He was 9-for-17 with three walks, 2 Ks, only 2 Ks, 4 ribbies, a dong, a double. Like, he is currently slashing 529, 600, 765. And yeah, you're right that he just makes everybody. He is one of, like, the few players who, in a sport that is very one-on-one, makes his teammates better just because the pitchers are exhausted thinking about him.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like, the Yankees, for whom the Astros have been such a bugaboo, over the last,
they've been a nightmare. They've been the worst. They've been the last thing you ever want to think about.
They've been a speed bump. They've been the Astros, for whom the Yankees have been a minor inconvenience over the last decade. Just to start, like, you can't read too much into the beginning of these seasons, like, obviously. But I don't think you could have a more significant first four games for any team against any team from a vibes perspective. Like, if the Yankees come into the year, especially because the Yankees are just so vibe dependent always because of how they move. And so for this team to come in and start the year going 4-0 in Houston against the Astros is like, I mean, it's dreamland stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And let's stick on the Yankees here before we flip it to Houston briefly. But to your point, right, I think if you ask Yankees fans, and we could ask, you know, Hart's the producer about this too, like, I mean, I think if they had signed up for a split, they'd be feeling joyous, because you just go, and this is a lot of teams in the American League, when you go to Houston, you're just like, oh, please, please. Now, again, maybe what the Rangers did in the postseason last year has started to flip that narrative, and now Houston maybe isn't as comfortable. And by the way, let's actually remember last year in general. Remember, the Astros were just bizarrely terrible at home for a lot of last season, right. And then that carried into the postseason. So, again, not going to extrapolate it too much, but this is just not something we've seen, let alone for the Yankees in recent years. So they got to be feeling as good as possible. And you mentioned the vibes. I think we have to talk about some of the other characters besides Juan Soto here.
So one thing that will not continue is I don't think the bullpen is going to make it through the whole season without allowing a run. I think at some point the bullpen will allow a run.
I also don't think that Brian Abreu, Josh Hader, Ryan Presley will combine for like a 9 ERA. I'm also going to take the under on that on the opposite side. But sticking on the Yankees, yes. I mean, this cast of relatively new characters like Nick Birdie and Caleb Ferguson and Victor Gonzalez, right? Like they look really good. But now at the same time, while I would bet against the 0 ERA, we have been consistent in our trust that the Yankees run prevention unit is legit.
They could like pick people off the subway and teach them a sweeper and put them in the pen and have them have like a 5 ERA. You know, like the Yankees are elite at this. They are elite at this. And it hasn't like always manifested in the rotation over the last couple of years, but just like in the bullpen, the way the Yankees just like create Ron Marinaccio, like Ian Hamilton being a thing is just amazing. And just so much credit to the Yankees pitching dev and their pitching coach, Matt Blake. It's very, very impressive.
Now let's, the last Yankees thing we wanted to say before we flip it to the Houston panic meter is Alex Verdugo. Okay. So he comes in from the Red Sox with a trade. Remember it's the day basically before they trade for Soto, right? At the winter meetings, and we're all like, oh my God, like this is really the first move that we're doing. We're trading for Alex Verdugo. This is wild. I got to root for this guy. This guy's been one of my least favorite players. He's so obnoxious. And it's like, exactly. That's what you want. You would love to have Alex Verdugo on your team. He's exactly the personality that wants to bring some level of spark and just obnoxiousness. Like, that's good. It fits in perfectly. And when you're 4-0 to start the year in Houston, of course, afterwards, he's going to be giving you quotes that you're going to put in graphics and you'll be like, this is my guy. Of course.
Yankees fans don't want to hear this. You would have loved Dustin Pedroia if he was clean shaven and playing second base. You would have loved every last stinking minute of it, as would Red Sox fans have loved if Cano was their second baseman. It's all factionalism. It's all laundry.
It's all laundry, baby.
Yeah. And you know what? That's fine. That's okay. Right. And here's another thing. Ooh, more likely to happen. Okay. More likely to happen. The Yankees bullpen allowing a run at some point, or Alex Verdugo doing or saying something that pisses off Yankees fans during this year.
Oh, man. I think I'm just going to roll with the Yankees ERA being 0.
Okay. Got it.
That's more likely.
Alex Verdugo is great for just like the storyline perspective. Yankees fans, like, right? I'm not trying to like belittle the vibe. Like, you should love this guy right now. Like, he should be firing you up, and you should be saying, we're back, and you should be wearing your Yankee stuff to work today. Like, and he should be pushing that energy for you. I guess what we're just saying is it is funny how quickly these things change, have changed, and will change.
Yeah. The last thing I'll say about Verdugo is, you know, I was thinking about it when they first traded for him. I was like, oh, man, like, well, but just wait till he, you know, has a cold stretch, whatever. I mean, the one thing you could say about Verdugo as a player is that, like, he's basically never been bad. He does usually have a baseline. And so, like, but at the same time, when you're talking about how Yankees fans respond to, you know, bad stretches, it requires a much smaller sample size. So, you know, he's not exactly off to the hottest start offensively, but it doesn't matter. He makes a nice play in the outfield. So we'll see. But I get it. He's going to him and Stroman bringing in, like, the kind of energy where it's like, oh, how's that going to work? It's like, come on. You know how quickly you're going to forget that Marcus Stroman once tweeted, you know, at calling Brian Cashman a dummy? Like, you're going to forget about it so fast. Yankees 4-0. These guys can get away with anything.
Marcus Stroman's going to say there's no place, there's nowhere better than pitching in the Bronx. And it's going to be like, whoa, oh my God.
We love this guy.
Put him in Monument Park.
Okay, let's quickly on Houston, 0-4. First of all, by the way, great stat from Sarah Langs, who is obviously churning out some quality content over the weekend. Yankees just the seventh team to open a season with four or more straight wins after being tied or trailing in the sixth inning or later. Seventh team ever. And it's only happened like twice in the last 40 years.
I love stats like that because every year, every good team, the fans and the people around the team are like, this is just like a different group of guys. Like, this is a special group. And so anytime that Langs can pop out a tweet,
yeah,
that's like, no, this is like actually outrageously abnormal what just
and
happened.
So,
and validate that experience is great.
It's true. Astros' first 0-4 start since 2011. How good? That team was pretty good, right? They came back, like they bounced back from the 0-4 start, the 2011 Astros.
That team put up some numbers.
Yeah. If the 2024 Astros lose 106 games, I don't even know what would have to happen for that to happen. But the other thing was the last time Astros got mopped at home, I didn't have to look this one up because I remember it so well. Mariners 2018, Edwin Diaz got saves in all four games. And that is one of the most ridiculous four-game stretches of my Mariners fandom. So this is not a normal thing to happen. But anyway, I mean, listen, if you want us to overreact and say the Astros are toast now, like, that's fine. I know the rest of the AL West is certainly enjoying their downfall, even if it means, you know, enjoying a Yankees victory. But yeah, I mean, you know what? I think they'll probably be okay. But 0-4, it's not like there's a good thing about 0-4. And the fact that they were leading in a lot of these games doesn't make it feel any better either. So Martin Maldonado, while he is also winless up with the White Sox, he's at least probably thinking this morning, they miss me. They miss me dearly. I don't know what Dusty's up to. I'm sure he's like, yeah, see, they're just not the same without me. But we'll give the Astros some time.
Let's head down
to
Florida. The Pirates strolling in to the Lone Depot and mopping the Miami Marlins in Miami. It's all because the roof was open. This was like the Pirates winning four in a row here. Just immediate, like, 2023 Orioles energy bursting into the world irrationally in some ways, because it is important to remember that the 2023 Pirates also started off in Fuego. They were 20-8 on April 29th. Okay. And everyone was like, oh, the Pirates, this, that. And I think that, man, I really want to sit here and be like, that's true, but this team is different. Because I think I do believe that, like, the 2023 Pirates, at least, I didn't have as much confidence then as I do now that they're going to be competitive. I'm more optimistic about the 2024 Pirates than I was about the 23 Pirates at the same time last year.
Totally. And I mean, the obvious thing, first of all, you know, last year they didn't win their opening series. They won opening day, lost the series in Cincinnati. And then it was like a couple weeks and then they rattle off like 10 of 11 or something. So the obvious question is like, okay, well, what's different, right? Like, who's on this team? Because I'm looking at the lineup and, like, sure, you've subbed in some veterans like Michael A. Taylor and, you know, Rowdy, right? Rowdy has that big homer over the weekend. But the offense, you're still – now, Cruz was already hurt by the time they got to the end of April last year. So O'Neill Cruz is, of course, and he's had some moments. But to me, it's the pitching, right? And while I don't know how long Bailey Falter is going to last in the rotation, and that probably should be the case, Jared Jones, man, I mean, he is – listen, I know Skeens, you could say, oh, he should be up. He's one of their five best stars. Totally. I hear that. But like Jared Jones is right there and he's here and he made the rotation. He had already pitched in Triple A. He earned it. He basically proved to be like, for all we've talked about, okay, can the Pirates actually develop a guy here? You know, Mitch Keller, he of course broke out, but you could say that was maybe attributed to more outside development and whatnot. Jared Jones, man, he is the truth. I mean, this guy, you want 100 miles an hour with 90 mile an hour sliders? Like, that's Jared Jones is doing it. You know, you don't have to wait for Paul Skeens. he looks pretty awesome. So that's a big difference. And again, it's still going to depend on this next wave of young hitters, actually, whether it's Atriola, whether it's Sawinski, whether it's, you know, I mean, Henry Davis, we'll see. Obviously, we talked about him as the catcher. He hasn't really gotten going offensively yet. I'm not quite as bullish, but hey, as far as there's enough different pieces here where you can start to think that there's reason for optimism.
I believe in the arms. I believe in Cruz, and I believe in Ke'Bryan Hayes being a better offensive player than he was. I think we sleep on Brian Reynolds. Yep. We've talked about Michael A. Taylor being incredibly underrated.
Yep.
I don't believe in Rowdy Tellez. I just want to say that right now. And there are still some big, like, Aliqua Williams is.
Yeah, not, he that can't. I mean, can't be getting navies.
That's not.
But to believe about the arms, like, to me, it's about not just arms that we have on the team now. It's like, I believe in that next wave. That is going to be Skeens at some point in the next month or two, right? Like, that's where you start to look at a team and you think, almost in the way that with Baltimore, if you make that comparison, you know, those reinforcements came on offense and you were suddenly like, oh my God, this lineup's awesome. I think we could start to feel that about Pittsburgh's pitching staff. The offense, there's not as many like reinforcements coming on offense. So like these guys that we're already seeing are going to have to continue to progress and perform. But I agree. I think Hayes and Reynolds could be that. Those are both all-star talents when they're right.
And two really impressive comeback wins on opening day. And then yesterday, winning 9-7 on the getaway day on Sunday. Two pretty comprehensive W's, 7-2 and 9-3 in the middle of that. I was just, you know, it was, it's not as authoritative, I guess, as what the Yankees did, but like winning all four of your games to start the year on the road is incredibly notable. Yes. However, yes. It should be noted, let's quickly talk about the Marlins. The Marlins starting the season by losing by one run on opening day and then losing another close game on Sunday that they blew after being like the kings of, you know,
close skirting
by the skin of their teeth. That is funny and unfortunate. But according to Jazz Chisholm, they lost, or the hitters struggled because of the shadows.
Yeah.
What they did not do in the shadows.
So that is a great joke. Here is the thing. Here's what confuses me about this. Is that he was basically saying, what Jazz said afterwards was, we don't normally play day games with the roof open. And so that was like the sight lines were weird. And by the way, it's true that like when you were watching, especially early in the games, like the shadows were wonky. And I will just say, I, as a very basic baseball observer, I do think shadows are incredible. Like, I can't understand how hitters can hit with I'm in that sense, I hear. Now, however, saying it after you get mopped is not a good look. And the reason what's extra weird is, maybe I'm completely wrong about this, but Jazz hit a grand slam earlier in this game where against Bailey Falter, where he is very much in the shadows and hits a grand slam. And then when he references it after the game and is like, yeah, it's hard to hit 101 with the shadows. The at bat against Chapman, there do not appear to be shadows. And so I'm just like, which one is it, bro? I don't know. I mean, again, as we've said before, we're rooting for Jazz. But it's like, this is not, we can't, even if what you're saying is not wrong, that's not what people want to hear right now.
This is not like the 3-point line situation in March Madness, okay? Which, by the way, unbelievably embarrassing and hilarious.
So
elite
bad.
That cannot happen.
Yes.
It is, both teams deal with the shadows.
Yes. Well, that too, obviously.
Right? Like, the Pirates are not shadow oblivious. And so, I don't know. We love Jazz. His home run was unbelievable. And like, there are very few people on the planet who can do what he did with that swing.
It was
a great reminder why, like, despite all the Jazznesses at times, he is still an matchable type talent who deserves every bit of leeway in terms of playing time and support, like, because he can electrify a team and a fan base and inspire people in a way that very few other players can. And because that's like why when we keep saying like we are rooting for Jazz, like that's why, because he is something special, and like we want to just make sure that that, not that we have any say in it, but like we want that to be seen by everyone for a long
yeah.
time.
Yeah, and he made, you know, he made a couple outstanding plays in center field too. Like, we know he's only just getting better out there. So whatever. But it's just one of those things where you're just like, that's just not what we want to hear. You just say, hey, we got our ass kicked. It's the first weekend of the season. We'll bounce back this week. That's kind of, I know it's like, it, you know, we always say, okay, do you want players to tell the truth or do you want them to give you cliches? We want players to tell the truth, but just know that like we will laugh if your truth is kind of goofy in this sense. And in this case, it is.
Speak your truth, talk your truth, but we will laugh at your truth. Okay, so those are our mops. Let's quickly touch on our sweeps. Tigers over the White Sox. Just what a start to the year.
Yeah.
One of the things that you said on last Friday's pod that was great was like, these bad teams are bad. Like, these bad teams are not messing around with how bad they are. White Sox were the great, and the same with like the Yankees coming out and winning three and being like, or four, and be like, we are good. Uh-huh. Trust us. Uh-huh. The White Sox coming out and losing three at home to the Tigers in like just cataclysmic fashion.
I mean,
and assuring the fan base that they do not need to care this year. Like, that's doing a solid.
Yeah. And it's so tough because, and by the way, I'm sure we will be bringing back our favorite segment, Sorry for Your Mentions, you know, for at White Sox at some point this season. But it is interesting. It is an interesting kind of fan experience or just like observation, like looking at those replies and like looking at White Sox fans who we follow a lot of, like tweet about this team. It's like, listen, these people, you guys know, like, this is the plan, is to lose. And so like, I can't blame you for being super frustrated, but at the same time, it's like, yeah, I mean, that's kind of the team you're rolling out there. You know, if you're going to be going wild over every loss in the way that you're losing, it's going to be a long year. And to your point, like, you have the games where you're totally hopeless earlier on in the series, and then to have like, oh, we're in it. And it's like, oh, no, we're not. As we saw on Sunday. So, and to have, by the way, to mix in the Luis Robert monster home runs there, over the weekend as well, to be like, oh yeah, he's still on this team. It was tough, but hey, you got Garrett Crochet, the Crochet versus Luis Robert, who's going to be the all-star, is going to be pretty fun to watch for the next 3 months.
Por que no los dos, baby. The other sweep, the Tigers.
I'm
going to just reserve a little judgment, and maybe this is unfair.
It's fair. They will tell you it's fair.
The White Sox are just such a punchline and punching bag that, like, I need them to. They're coming here, actually. Yeah. This week, so I'll go see them play the Mets, who might also suck.
Well, I was going to say the Tigers next series is at the Mets and then home against Oakland and then at Pittsburgh. So maybe if we can make it all the way to next Monday, we could have the undefeated Pirates and Tigers, because I know the Pirates are going to the Nats. Like, that could be fun. That could be fun.
The 72 we'll Dolphins are sweating in their sheets. We'll talk about the Tigers a little bit more later in the week. I will think I'll have a better sense of them after I see them in person this week. So we'll touch on that later. Mm-hmm. Brewers and Mets. Okay, so this was probably like hilariously the biggest storyline of opening week was the Rhys Hoskins, Jeff McNeil beef. Let's be very clear about a couple things. All right. Both when it comes to fan bases and the players on the field and us, everyone is biased when we talk about benches clearing, whatever the hell. Okay. Whether that's like throwing at guys or dirty slides, Jake and Jordan have known Rhys Hoskins for going on like 8 years. Okay. And so I saw the slide, and like before I even thought about it, I was like, Rhys is innocent. Like, because like that's our bias in the same way that if you are a Brewers fan, you think he's innocent. And if you're a Mets fan, you think he should go to The Hague. Like, that's just how this stuff works. And it also, just to be clear, that funnels down to the teams where,
of course,
or not, like Brett Beatty, as an example, not reporting anything, agrees with Jeff McNeil or not, he has to go back him up, right? And so when we talk about this, it is just important for everyone to understand that we're all biased, except if you're like a Diamondbacks fan who's just like watching the video on the internet.
Right. Right.
So I just think that's important to acknowledge. That being said, I don't care.
It doesn't matter.
You made a great point to me on the phone. We were talking about this, which was like, maybe this isn't fair to say. Like, if McNeil doesn't react, we're never talking about this ever.
No, like, I just, again, we have now gone so, this is going to sound wild coming from, like, this isn't, I'm not going to come across as, you know, old school baseball, like, oh, well, we've lost, you know, everyone's soft now, whatever. But the truth
guys
is,
guys should
like,
go in a second with a crowbar.
Everyone should be, you know, slided in with whatever as violently as possible. No, at the same time, like, we've, I think fairly and totally reasonably so, have legislated any amount of violence around the bag out of the game to the point where now you see anything that strays away from that. And in this case, Jeff McNeil, but in some cases, opposing fans or whatever, look at it and be like, oh my God, he was trying to, you know, take him out. Whereas while I am glad that, you know, fielders are more protected than they were however many years ago, I did not look at the slide and like gasp immediately. And I am convinced that if Jeff McNeil had just kind of popped up and ran back in or went back to his position, literally nobody would mention it. I promise you this exact slide has taken place where even if they, you know, they slide into the fielder and the fielder kind of ends up on top of them, you know, by accident, and they just kind of awkwardly, you know, just get up and then the play moves on and nobody notices. But as soon as, you know, McNeil starts barking, because let's also point out for Reese, Reese just started running back to the dugout, right? Sometimes I will say we've seen hard slides and the fielder and the base runner gets up and starts chirping as well. And that's when you feel like, okay, this is not, whether or not the actual slide itself was dirty or not or aggressive or not. Sometimes base runners can also add to the antagonizing for sure. That was the opposite of what Reese did here. And again, if that sounds like I'm making excuses for him, that's fine. I'm just saying is this slide in particular did not seem anything out of the ordinary. It just suddenly becomes that. And then obviously what it devolves into is what we see later in the weekend, which is Reese Hoskins kicking their ass in the next game. And then Johan Ramirez, who already has no idea where the ball is going, throwing it behind Reese and then getting suspended for three games. So again,
I don't want to talk about that.
No, I don't either. I'm
the
just saying
ball
that
wars
that
is a different thing.
Yeah, if you missed it, whatever. But that's so we're focusing on the slide. But obviously, as we've seen this over and over, this is what it devolves into because baseball is baseball, and it's a very silly thing.
Yeah, I personally, again, my bias is here. I thought the slide was hard and fair. If it had been deemed dangerous, they would have called the runner at first out.
Yeah,
like the umpires reviewed the play.
Yeah,
right. And so they didn't deem that to be dangerous. You can slide through the bag hard. That is allowed, right? And someone, I think John Boy dug up videos of like Reese doing this a lot. Like, yeah, you know who's probably doing this often is like Jeff McNeil and a lot of players around the league, right? And that's what I'm saying when I mean, and this goes to the Brewers too. Like if they had a guy that slid into this, that got slid into like this, I could totally imagine the Brewers getting pissed off about the slide incorrectly. And so like, again, it is just laundry and factionalism and bias, and that's okay. What I laughed at, and you know, shouts out to John Boy who like did all the lip reading stuff here, where there's McNeil saying Reese is the dirtiest effing player I've ever effing played with, which is, that is funny because there is no way that is true. There, like, I refuse to believe that Reese Hoskins is the dirtiest player that Jeff McNeil has ever played with.
Yeah.
Or with. I don't know when they would have played together.
Well, whatever, on the same
or played
team.
On the field with.
Sure,
like,
sure.
That's just, no, yeah. I'm sorry. Maybe I'm being biased, but whatever. The one other thing I want to say, I want to say shouts out to the Brewers who, like, Johan Ramirez gets ejected. They go to Pat Murphy, the Brewers manager, and Pat Murphy's like, yeah, we didn't think it was intentional. It's all cool. Like, so many teams would, like, play it up. And I like that the Brewers were like, yeah, we didn't think that was intentional. That's okay. We're going to play tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Like, I was, oh, cool. Like, more teams need to handle things like that. I just thought it was, like, simple. And then it just kind of fizzled it out on Sunday.
Yeah.
Where, like, it wasn't a distraction. in the same way in the last game of the series.
It doesn't. It doesn't. So
anyway,
yeah.
Like Mets fans, like I get. I also think that there's like some Ruben Tejada PTSD here,
of course,
which is totally understandable, and like I'm sympathetic to that. And we don't. I'm not sitting here advocating that guys should like be jumping into other guys' legs trying to break them or anything.
No.
And I think that, you know, we talk about this too, like when a guy gets hit with a pitch, that's not intentional, but it's 100 miles an hour and they get mad. Like Jeff McNeil is allowed to like get a little mad that he got slid into because that's not a fun thing to happen to you.
Exactly.
And so like that's totally legitimate. But for it to get to the point that it did on all sides was just very silly. On the field, quickly, the Mets just kind of got pantsed.
Yeah. I mean, I want to talk more just about like Milwaukee's pitching. I know like you trade Corbin Burns, you lose Devin Williams. Listen, this team is still going to be able to pitch it pretty good. And we've talked about the bullpen that they had, even without Devin Williams, is still could be one of the best in the league with Uribe, with McGill, with Piamps. Like if the Brewers are going to be bad this year, it is because they don't have enough offense because it's just too imbalanced to or like the back end of the starting pitching could be a problem. But if they take a lead to the sixth or seventh, like they're going to still be in pretty good shape, I would say.
And then on the Mets, first of all, Jackson Chourio.
Yes.
Looked like he belonged, 20 years old, starting in center field. Youngest opening day starting center fielder since Griffey.
Yep. He already delivered like 95th percentile sprint speed or something. Like it's also one of those things where, again, you can measure things that quickly and you can understand the tools in a very real way. Like, yeah, that's a big part of just the Brewers offense that they're clearly banking on is like he was already batting leadoff. Like they believe he will charge this offense in a real way. And that's very possible.
We already have Edwin Diaz trumpeting to the mound in a loss. He wanted to pitch because he hadn't thrown in a while. So we are currently at one Edwin Diaz zero Edwin Diaz saves and one Edwin Diaz trumpets while down.
It was great to have him back, though. As someone who I, of course, we love Edwin, he doesn't care. So I'm glad he got to pitch. Great to see him back.
I don't want to be too Mets negative right now. I do want to convey, like, I really believe in Carlos Mendoza. Like, I think that is a guy who just, like, knows what he's doing and is a pro. Time maybe will prove me wrong and we can clip this and make me look like an idiot in 2 years. But I just have faith in him and I have faith in Stearns. And like seeing the Brewers beat the Mets yesterday was like in some ways a good reminder why the Mets went out and got Stearns to try and Brewersify what they're doing.
Yeah.
Right. And so just patience is a virtue. Last thing. And that is Pete Alonso going to the Zach Bryan concert on Saturday night. And singing on stage with Zach Bryan. Just some unbelievable stuff about this on Twitter of Mets fans being like, I can't believe that he was out at a concert at night. Let me tell you something, okay? Pete Alonso, just generally, as far as what is this guy up to in his free time, is just so far down like the list of things that you should be worried about. Like, I cannot even begin... Maybe I'm revealing too much. Like, do not worry about that guy. That's just my sense. Like the Mets, like the 1986 Mets were like doing drugs, like in the clubhouse.
That's true.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
If the worst thing that guys on your team are doing is going out to a concert the night before a game, that is great. That is awesome. Like every manager would take that every single day of the week.
100%. But again, it just exposes the general, diseased fandom brain that we have. We collective humans on Earth, I don't think me and you, Jake, but it's like they have a job to do. And if they're not doing that job well, they need to go sit at home and think about what they've done. No, that's obviously not the case. Pete Alonso should go live his life. Pete hit a homer. It's not like Pete homered, and I know they lost on Saturday, but like he's doing his job. You don't have to worry about that. So regardless of worried about it or not, it's just like, listen, they have a job. They go do it. They do their best, and then they go home and they get to do other things. So it's not that complicated.
As long as they're not doing crimes or like staying up all night on purpose, like it's okay. I will say it was very funny watching Pete walk into the clubhouse yesterday when I was in there looking like a middle school girl, like showing up on Monday after going to a Taylor Swift concert with like the tote and the sweatshirt.
He's got the
and
merch, like, baby. Yeah. Got, of course.
He was merched up. Like he was merched up. It was great.
Good for Pete.
Okay.
Good for Pete.
Good for Pete. Like it's, hey, it's fun to see celebrities fanboy other celebrities because it's like,
yes.
Like Pete, the way that you feel about Zach Bryan is how like every like 11-year-old in Queens feels about you. So right. That's a good thing.
Right.
And that's good. It's good to care. Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we will zip on through the rest of the series from the weekend and say goodbye.
One, two, three, four. Those are numbers. But you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on Auto Trader. They're really good at numbers. Auto Trader.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman. Let's talk about splits. Not bananas, but split series. Red Sox, Mariners, two apiece. I'll toss you the rock here, Jordan.
Yeah, so this was not the most inspiring offensive performance for Seattle. It was interesting because you had a situation where when we talked about the Red Sox, I'm like, oh, okay, how can they be good? A lot of it was, oh, look at this. Like, this lineup could actually kind of bang. Like, if it all comes together, how are they going to get outs? And instead, this lineup without Devers, who missed the two middle games of the series, was a tough watch. And it was like, listen, I know we believe O'Neill had some moments and Cassis, whatever. The lineup without Devers, no bueno. However, the pitching, shouts out to, you know, Andrew Bailey, because that's Bayo, Pivetta, Whitlock, and Cutter Crawford, who, by the way, has still, I know he was good for a lot of last season, one of the most ridiculous arm actions that you will see when they do the slow-mo and they have him like punching himself in the face before he throws, is one of the more ridiculous starting pitching, you know, deliveries we have. But all of them were amazing. And what the Red Sox game plan was very simple. The Mariners cannot hit anything that's not a fastball. I believe they threw the lowest percentage of four-seam fastballs of any team in baseball this weekend, and it worked. They come out with a split, but I think that's a pretty good outcome considering how good the Mariners pitching was on all fronts. But yeah, I mean, it was the Mariners. I'll say one more Mariners thing, but go ahead.
Yeah, I think I erred in underrating the impact of Andrew Bailey, their new pitching coach, and Craig Breslow, the new chief baseball officer. Thank you. Who is, you know, hailed as a pitching guru. Those are people who know how to get outs.
Yep.
And Cutter Crawford and Pivetta and Brian Bayo, like, those are guys who have good enough stuff to get outs if you are using them in a correct way. Right. They're not, none of them are dominant, but like, I think I underrated how much faith Red Sox fans should have in that group to get outs with the pitchers they have.
Totally agree.
You said you had another Mariners thing?
Yeah. The last thing on the Mariners is like, I mean, Kirby was incredible. Gilbert was incredible. Like, generally, the pitching lived up to what I expected. But again, these games follow the same recipe to the degree where, like, I'm watching them and I'm like, it's the same feeling I have when, you know, me and my wife want to watch like a Food Network show and we turn on an episode and we're like, have I seen this one? You watch like 8 minutes in and you're like, have I already seen this one before?
Like, no. They're doing a paella.
It wasn't paella. No, it was something. It was a seafood boil last time. It was a little bit different, but it's just pretty much the same thing. I've pretty much already seen this episode. That's what it's like watching the Mariners, which is very frustrating. But you know, it is what it is. I'm not going to overreact. The pitching, I mean, God, Kirby is so good. Gilbert is so good.
Quick Mariners thing. Jordan Schusterman favorite, Austin Voth. In the Mariners bullpen.
Oh, man.
Looking gnarly.
Oh,
you've
man.
Been early. Look, you know what, Jordan? You know why, right? It's an election year, which means everyone's going out and voting. Okay, vote or die, baby.
Voth, you got to get out the vote. And I will say he's going to be important because while the starting pitching was pretty much what you could have hoped for, as long as Brash and Santos are out, like, they're going to need some randos to step up here in the bullpen. And why not Austin Voth? Why not? I've been a fan since the beginning in D.C. So anyway, the one other Mariners thing quickly is, okay, so Sunday, I'm surprised I didn't even notice this, but Jake, I know you've been tweeting about the uniforms a lot, and we're all tweeting about
how... I don't want to talk about it now. We'll talk about it on Wednesday.
That's fine.
I can't. I'm so mad at how mad I am.
That's totally fair. That's a whole other podcast, and you're going to write about it, whatever. But it didn't even register for me that the Mariners normally wear they have Sunday unis, right? That are more of the kind of the alt throwback, like the blue and like the yellow with the yellow trim, which are, I think, are some of the best uniforms in baseball. I love them. They wear them every Sunday. They weren't wearing them on Sunday. I didn't even notice until after the game when someone tweeted at them like, hey, like where are the Sunday cream uniforms? And at Mariners responded, they haven't been delivered yet. They're still in the rotation. We still plan to wear them this season. So again, this is a version of a fanatic screw up that we haven't even thought about, which is that literally teams don't even have their alternate uniforms yet.
So I've heard some versions of this about like pants limits, that there are some teams that like don't have as many pants as they need. Even still, what a freaking embarrassment.
Yeah.
Anyway. Toronto against Tampa. I'm going to be honest. Yeah. Didn't watch a whole lot of this one.
Yeah,
look, there's 15 series every weekend and some of them slip through my cracks.
Yeah.
And this was one of them. I apologize to all the Jays and Rays fans out there. I do hate you personally. Yes. Yep. But yep. I also, you know, it happens.
Yeah. Yeah. The highlights from this one, again, the Rays had some good pitching performances. The Rays ball boys on both sides, both the right and left field line, made some outstanding plays. The Codify baseball account, I would encourage checking out some of the highlights over there because these were one of the better plays I've seen. Again, the Rays, they're just good at everything. What can we say?
And Justin Turner with a big game on Sunday. We spoke a lot during the preview for the Blue Jays. Like, they need a third potato behind Guerrero and Bichette. And if that can be Justin Turner having like a, you know, 125 OPS plus. Springer has looked more athletic. I have to say, like, the thing with Springer that I was most concerned about was him like athletically going down, his body kind of being cooked. And he's looked pretty good in the early going.
Yep. Agreed. Agreed. Giants and Padres. This one was a very impressive showing from the Giants, and then they just got absolutely waxed. Poor Dalton Jeffries gets called up to kind of make a spot start and just gets blasted. We ended up with our first position player pitching of the season, I believe, on Sunday. So the Padres kind of coming to life. They end up splitting 2-2. But, you know, some encouraging signs on both sides. I would say my biggest takeaways from each were Jake Cronenworth looks really good for San Diego. That is a huge deal for them. If he is going to be a big part of their offense, I would say that is significant. And then Matt Chapman looks awesome. And like, I know he was obviously like one of the best players in baseball last April, and then it all went down. So we'll see if that sustains, but he's looking like quite a nice addition.
Two other players I want to just shout out. Luis Camposano for San Diego. Mm-hmm. It's just a really interesting trajectory where he has been kind of like so up and down between AAA and the big leagues over the last 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
3 years.
Yeah.
And the Padres like really decided to give him the reins this year. Yeah. And this guy was a top 50 prospect in baseball for a reason. And if he can be a top, you know, 15 catcher in the league, that's a big deal for the Padres.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Cause we've kind of like had the catcher spot as like a zero in our head. I know they had Gary for a little bit last year, but for the most part, it's just kind of been like, and that's like, oh, we're not even worried about that. He was like quietly pretty good last year and not a tiny sample that I didn't really realize, and he's been off to a very, very good start.
The other guy is Michael Conforto, which
I mean
how about that guy is banging the ball. Mm-hmm. Remember, Conforto missed all of 2022 with that shoulder situation and probably wasn't, you know, locked in or comfortable or his best self in 2023. This is a really good player. He was a very good player for the Mets for a very long time. Would not surprise me if Conforto can be a real contributor this year. It almost feels like they signed him over this past offseason, actually. Like, just the way that he slots in with Chapman and Soler.
We weren't watching the Giants last year, so now we can pretend like that first year never happened.
All right, let's move on to the 3-1 series. Guardians over A's. Guardians blowing the mop on Sunday.
They came back. They were down. They came back. And it was like, oh, there's no way the A's are going to be able to pull this out. And then ultimately, the A's win on a walk-off walk, which I was happy to see because, again, I do – like, I want the A's players to experience as many wins as they reasonably can within the limits that they are going to be navigating. So that was a little bit disappointing, the opportunity there. But still, Cleveland was certainly the better team. Bieber, of course, looked fantastic, and generally their pitching was good. And we will see – I was just talking about how all the Mariners, okay, good pitching and no offense – well, now Cleveland heads up to Seattle, where we will continue a bunch of 1-0 games all week.
Okay, so what I love, right, obviously, Cleveland's offense looked really good against Oakland, which, yeah. Mazel tov. Mm-hmm. They had a 138 team OPS plus over the weekend. So for people who don't know, 100 is league average. Anything above or below 100 is kind of on that scale. 138 equates to like an 832 OPS. Like, they were... as a team, like an all-star level hitter, more or less, they hit two home runs. So having a 138 OPS plus as a team and hitting only two home runs is both unsustainable and very Cleveland Guardians, and just makes me laugh quite a bit. But again, this pitching staff is good. Shane Bieber looking unbelievable on opening day is just something to keep an eye on.
And hey, you say those two home runs. One of them was Jose Ramirez. One of them was Stephen Kwan, who hadn't homered since like last July or something. So nice to see Kwan already get one over the fence.
Friend of the show. Diamondbacks taking 2 out of 3 against three out of four. 3 out of 4, sorry. Mm-hmm. Against the Colorado Rockies, which honestly feels like a split. Because the Rockies so bad.
I'll say though, Brandon Pfaadt looked very, very good on Sunday. Yeah. And that is a significant, as far as pitchers we are expecting to kind of take that next leap this year, he certainly qualifies there. The Dodgers, anything else on
one Arizona? Second. Yeah. I'm not done there. Two other things.
Okay. You want to pile on Colorado, please?
Three other things. Rolling into the season, coming off like the NL championship and getting to play the Rockies and get some nice little easy dubs under the belt at home for Arizona. Great. That's great runway. That's number one. Number two, the new like red uniforms with the teal Diamondback script. I kind of like them. I think the new Diamondback, they change their uniforms like every 25 minutes. This new group, good. Love it. Don't do too much to it. And one Rockies thing, which is, you know it's bad when Brenton Doyle's hitting seventh, which he did on Sunday. Brenton Doyle, who is one of the best defensive players, if not the best defensive player in baseball, had a 52 OPS plus last year. He hit 203, batting average 203, OBP 250. He was hitting seventh for the Rockies in front of Jake Cabe and Jacob Stallings.
Well, he's already got 4 hits this year, which is second on the team behind Ryan McMahon. So go, Rockies, go. Let's stick in the NL West for the Los Angeles Dodgers. This might be the least we talk about the Dodgers all season, and that's fine. Because basically what we saw this weekend was, even in the one game that they lost, they had Ohtani up with the bases loaded, you know, ready to go. Ohtani's honestly – now, Ohtani's basically alternating between looking terrible and hitting a ball 115. That's essentially what he has done, which is, again, an interesting contrast between Mookie and Freddie, who never look bad. Mookie's unbelievable. But, yeah, I mean, they're kind of exactly what we expected.
Can I just quickly on Ohtani?
Yeah.
If Ohtani continues to struggle in any way, people are going to be like, oh, it's the Ipe thing. Please remember how mediocre Bryce Harper looked for the first little bit coming back from his elbow surgery. And
well, here's the thing about that. Yes. But also, the thing that Bryce Harper was struggling with is that he wasn't hitting the ball hard. That's not a problem for Shohei right now. The power has not gone anywhere. He's hitting him just as hard as he always has. He's just a little. He said he's actually been speaking to the media, believe it or not, after these games, and he's like, "Yeah, my timing is bad." So, but yes, fair point.
Speaking of early result team OPS plus numbers, the Cardinals as a team are at 21, team OPS plus of 21. Yeah. I am a little worried about them. Are you worried about them? You picked them to win the division.
I sure did.
Would you take that back now?
Nope. I'm going to ride with St. Louis. Come on. Don't ask me to change my mind after one weekend. No.
Okay, just making sure.
I'm punting. And by the way, Victor Scott being in the big leagues makes me so happy. We'll talk about him more, but truly, he is a joy to watch.
he ripped the ball. He had like a 101 exit velo backside double, which was like, oh, like he's not just slap and dash. The Dodgers walk off win on Sunday, or sorry, not walk off, the Max Muncy bottom of the eighth home run. Yeah. Like they, it's the inevitable he's Dodgers on the team thing. Too. He's on the team too. We've seen this a bazillion times. It's just funny. All right, let's move to the 2-1 series wins. Just a couple of these to run through. Rangers over Cubs. How much of this one did you take in?
Very little since the opening day one. I know the Rangers pitching kind of didn't really have it on Sunday. But for the Cubs to manage to get one there was probably nice. But yeah, I mean, Langford looked great, right? I mean, it was a reminder of just where that offense is kind of capable of being is could be one of, if not the best in the league again.
Good series where like neither fan base can really overreact too much about anything, right? Like the Rangers got two, but the Cubs got theirs on the last day. I want to see a little bit more from Jordan Wicks, who was like fine on Sunday. That is a guy who I'm irrationally high on.
Here's a Rangers thing. Jared Walsh is on the Rangers. Now, he's really only playing because Nathaniel Lowe is hurt. However, Jared Walsh, he really broke out, was one of the wildest, you know, offensive breakouts of the last few years in Anaheim. And then it just disappeared. And I guess we acted like, okay, that never happened and it'll never happen again. Maybe it's in a bench role. Maybe it's in a platoon role. I don't really know how he fits moving forward once the Rangers are healthy. But seeing him hit a home run like he did over the weekend, I was like, that's Jared Walsh. I remember him. He was unbelievable a couple of years ago. So that would really be something.
Orioles taking 2 out of 3 over the Angels. The Angels salvaging the Sunday game. This was like the Angels in the outfield, you know, sequel. Yeah. It's like there must have, like, Matthew McConaughey was being lifted up by a bunch of, like, what a whip. Like, crap.
Well,
I thought they were going to just blow it.
Well, let me just say, I mean, yes, but let me just say, this is not an overreaction. Reed Detmers is their best pitcher.
Yeah,
I don't feel like that's a hot take. So I know he started the third game, but Reed Detmers is their best pitcher. So I could see him just being a very, very good, you know, 2 or 3 starter. But I still agree. I understand what you're saying.
No. I was just surprised that the bullpen held on. Like,
sure. Soriano looked very good. But yeah, I mean, other than that, I mean, you're still looking at an offense that's been obviously was terrible over the weekend. And yeah, we got a team meeting, right? We got reports of Ron Washington calling a team meeting after 2 games. And I think we probably overrate how much we should really talk about this because team meetings probably happen all the time. I'm amused by the negative connotation of team meeting in sports now. That just makes me laugh so much, is that team meeting is like the last thing you want to hear that your team is doing. You want your team to be meeting as little as possible. It's like, what? Why is that a bad? Like, if you explain that to a non-sports fan, you'd be like, yeah, meeting is actually really bad. It's like, why?
This could have been an email.
It's, you think Wash emails his players?
Oh, that's very funny. The Orioles bang. This team rips. Like, they're incredibly fun to watch. And the Orioles the Orioles early season schedule is like very easy. And so they could get up pretty quickly. Braves over the Phillies. I was at the first 2 games. That the Braves were just like, hey, remember, you've beat us in October, but we are better than you.
Still the Braves.
Like, we are better than you. The Braves are better than the Phillies.
They're better than all the teams.
Even the last 2 years, the Braves were better than the Phillies. The Phillies won, and they deserve credit and celebration for that, whatever. But, like, the Braves are better. They are better. And they showed why over the weekend. The Phillies bullpen was horrible in the first 2 games. The offense surprised, like, didn't do much against Spencer Strider, which is forgivable. Zach Wheeler looked great on Friday. Aaron Nola looked the opposite of that on Saturday. And then the Phillies salvage the series with a win on Sunday, coming back to beat the Braves, knocking, I think, the Aaron Bummer around a little bit.
Oh, right. Aaron Bummer's on the Braves. Yeah. How about that?
The one thing, though, is Michael Harris tweeting up a storm on the internet. Now, players tweeting at fans is funny. I'm not going to pick a side here, but I think we just need to I'm going to read a tweet quickly. This is from at INM Enterprises, quote tweeting a tweet from Michael Harris. And the tweet says, Braves starting center fielder is beefing with Embiid's left nut on Twitter.com after the second game of the season. That is because Michael Harris was going back and forth with some Phillies fans on Twitter, including one with the handle Embiid's left nut. I'm not going to wade into this, but like, it's as simple as the age of interacting with fans is so funny in this context, because it's like, hey, Embiid's left nut, let me try and have a rational conversation with you. You're not going to have a rational online conversation with someone who's going by Embiid's left nut. Like, yeah. That's not.
Yeah. And this applies again. There's a larger conversation to have about this, because on one hand, the player can't lose in some senses. On the other hand, as soon as you respond to at Embiid's left nut, you've lost, right? In a lot of cases, right? That is what they want. Now, I don't care. Let me rephrase that. Maybe you haven't lost, but like, that's what they want, right? They are literally, all the person who is tweeting at you is hoping for is that you respond in any way, whether you roast them back, whether you say something like that is the whole point, is to get your attention. And so in that sense, they won. That doesn't mean, I'll edit and say, doesn't mean you lost, because for us, it's like, it's all funny. And if it's all fun and games and it's not getting, you know, malicious or hateful or whatever, like, I don't care. I'm going to laugh at this all day long. And it seems like Michael Harris agrees.
This is the thing, dude. Like, sports dislike, like, Michael Harris is funny. Like, Michael Harris communicating with Phillies fans and like ragging on them is awesome and funny, and like adds more layers of richness to these two teams and these fan bases when they play. And as long as no one's like slurring it up, which I'm sure, you know, happens, unfortunately, like, if we can keep this thing PG, people, or at least PG-13, right. I'm in support of it. Yeah. Well, you go to R, we're going to have some words. But yeah, the Braves are good. Two more series quickly, Jordan. Reds over the Nationals. Yeah, amazing back-to-back L's.
Yeah,
on Saturday and Sunday.
I mean, again, just like trading some of the worst losses either of these two teams will have all season. Alexis Diaz just completely melts down on Saturday, and then on Sunday, which wasted another Nick Martini magic moment late in that game, where it was like, oh, Martini's going to do it again, and then Alexis Diaz blew the save, and then on Sunday it was like, oh man, the Nationals are going to win this series, and then Kyle Finnegan allows two home runs in 30 seconds, and the Reds walk it off once again. Remember, the Reds had some ridiculous number of walk-offs last year, and they have already delivered one this season. And then the final series is Minnesota over Kansas City. Kansas City kind of responding on Sunday with a massive win, just blasting Bailey Ober out of the stadium. They win 11-0. Bobby Witt Jr. almost hits for the cycle. And Brady Singer looked awesome. And that is main takeaway. Yes, that is most important there.
Brady Singer, 7 innings, 3 hits, no runs, 1 walk, 10 Ks. Like, yes. Brady Singer, 10 Ks. Even when Brady Singer was, like, at his peak, he was not, like, a 10K, 7-inning guy. That's awesome. They need that.
Here is the last, and so good for Brady Singer. We'll keep an eye on that. Last thing on this, and then we will say goodbye. It appears that in an age when we have many a junior out in baseball, Bobby Witt Jr. appears to be this generation's junior. I've seen it over the weekend, like Jeff Passan tweeting, just referring to him as junior. Think about how many juniors we have in baseball right now. Okay. I don't know if this is right or wrong. I'm just saying it's interesting that he appears to be the one that we are referring to as junior, just straight. So I don't know. Let's just keep an eye on this, okay? Because it was on the Royals broadcast too. They just kept referring to him as junior this, junior that. What do you think about that?
So in some ways, it's weird process of elimination, because Vladdy is Vladdy, right? Or Vladito, or just like we understand that, right? I think he's like Vladdy. His dad was Vlad. He's Vladdy. Maybe his dad was also Vladdy.
It's fine. I continue.
Okay. And then like Acuña, we didn't really know his dad.
Correct.
So like Acuña
Luis Jr., Robert, same thing.
We don't know. Like, we wish them the best and we assume that they're good fathers, but we don't know them. It is it is an interesting thing. Let's keep an eye on it for sure.
Right. Because we have Tatis, we have Luis Robert.
Can we call Michael Harris the second? Just the second?
The second. We have Victor Scott the second now too.
But I was going to say, Victor Scott.
We have him. We have a few. I think it should have been Lamont Wade Jr. He should have been Jr. I'm just saying. I just keep an eye on that. I don't even know how I feel about it. It really hit me. I just kept seeing people calling him Jr. I was like, huh. Interesting.
Also, right. I don't. Yeah, like there's a junior. We have a junior.
No, I know. Well, that was obviously my first thought, and I was like, listen, as long as there's the word junior, if you say junior, we're thinking about Ken. Okay. So anyway, all right, that's it. We went a little bit over an hour, but this was a delight. Thank you, Jake Mintz, for doing this podcast with me. We hope everyone enjoyed opening weekend. Thank you to Andrew Hartz for producing. As always, you can email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. We appreciate the support. If you like the show, leave a rating, review, let us know what you like, what you don't like. We would really appreciate it. Thank you all for listening, and we'll be back on Wednesday.
Well, if you don't like us, then that we can't really fix.
No.
So. No.
But if you don't like the show and there's something we can maybe change, let us know. Leave a rating. Leave a review. Email us, baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. We will talk to you on Wednesday.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on Auto Trader. Just you wait. Auto Trader.